Don't linger on its form, but think of what comes next. And that, as bad as things can get, beyond the great last judgments, it's not got and can't. Master, I said, these that we watch approaching us don't seem like people, and I don't know what they are. Such a hodgepodge my vision has become. Please understand, he said, the grievous nature of their test has bent them double, so that even my eyesight is barely adequate at best as to their nature. But you may descry, if you try hard to pick apart what shows beneath their folded form, how each is served with castigation as he slowly goes, crushed by the stone that keeps him tightly curved. Christians vainglorious! Tired wretches, who made sick by the mind's vision, come to trust a backward step. Is it not clear to you that we are caterpillars born and must become the angelic butterfly that sails defenseless up to judgment? Why does your poor mind float so high that it strains and fails? Since you are half-formed insects and no more, nothing but worms. As when a corbel props a roof or ceiling, there is sometimes seen a figure, breast on knees, whose strangeness stops the heart of him who sees it. So I'd been impressed by these, each one bent more or less, as his sore back had more or less to bear, and one that looked resigned to his distress seemed also, by his weeping, to despair, saying, I'm finished, with his will still there. Canto 11. Our Father, sang the shades in unison, who are in heaven, where you reign unbound, except by the great love you place upon your first works, the high circle spread around your throne like ripples. Hallowed be your name and power by every creature, as is fit, that they give thanks for what remains the same forever, your sweet love, the warmth of it. Your kingdom, may its peace reach down to us. If it does not, we may not, left alone, reach it, no matter how industrious we are. And as your angels all disown their will and sing hosannas, so let men yield their will too. Give us that daily bread today, without which he goes back again through bitter desert, who most looked ahead and labored for release and to advance. As we forgive all those who do us wrong, forgive us by your heart, without a glance towards our just deserts. And now our song is not for us, but don't put to the proof men's doubtful strength against the enemy of old. Teach them instead to stand aloof from him who stirs its evil wrath. Though we no longer need this, Lord, we ask it for those who remain behind us. So we sing our Paternoster for ourselves and more. And thus beseeching fair wind and strong wing, not just on their behalf but ours, they went. Beneath their burden, as we sometimes dream when we sleep badly, each a testament to different weight of grief. Done with their theme, their weary way around the terrace, all their effort dedicated to the purge of the world's fog. We'd do well to recall their soft words, meant to help us, that emerge always for love, and ask what should be done, and said by us for them, granted our will is good. Thus we might profit many a one, washing the stains away they carry still, so they may go, at last made pure and light, to see the starry wheels. Then Virgil, pray, in order that you soon attain the height by spread wings lifting you, when you will weigh no more than your desire, which way to take is best for a short route to find the stair. And if there's more than one stair, for his sake who has come with me, and has clothes to wear of flesh like Adam, so one goes to sleep watching him climb, although it's only fair to say he tries hard, which is the least steep? It wasn't clear who spoke up in reply to what my guide said, but this was the speech. Come with us to the right, where he can try a passage where a living man may reach the next stage up. Were I not hindered by this stone, which keeps my neck bowed and ashamed, and makes me hold my face down, I would look at him who still lives yet has not been named, to see if I know him, and if he took pity on me for this, my load of pride, to thank him. I was born in Italy, a Tuscan. Family on my father's side, Aldobrandesco. I should say that he was actually Guglielmo. I don't know if his name might have been once known to you. My forebears' blood and great deeds made me so superb that I forgot how all men grew to the common taste of milk. As you might know, I scorned them all, and took my arrogance so far I died from it. The Sienese will tell you how. They came to watch me dance at home in Campagnatico. But fleas need time to kill a dog, and in the square I rode and slew them by the bunch until one of them got behind me. That day there, my castle's children all remember still. I am Umberto. Pride, ah! Would it were on me alone that it had wrought its ill. Gladly I would have been sole sufferer. But all my kinsmen it has ravelled in the same calamity. I bear the load. You saw humility. Here see the sin of lacking it. And so I walk this road till God is satisfied. I never did any of this among the living. Now I do it with the dead. I heard and hid my face, and one of them, I don't know how, he had not spoken, twisted underneath his weight, saw me, and watched me all the while he labored, and he called through gritted teeth, as I went with them, bending in their style, which strains the spine in every little part. "Aren't you," I said, "the pride of Gubbio, that Oderisi lauded for the art that Paris calls illumination?" "So," he said, "they call me brother. But the palm goes to Bologna, where young Franco's brush embellishes the pages with a calm intensity of form that makes me blush. To him the honor, of which part is mine, but no more. While I lived, though, I might well have taken on this point a different line, unbalanced by my impulse to excel. But here, for pride like that, we pay the price. And I would not be here yet had I failed, with power to sin, my boastful vice to quell. I turn to God. Ah, how we are assailed by empty glory in our skill! How brief the green life of the leaves, unless an age of dead wood comes to put it in relief. But after Cimabue was the rage, make way for Giotto, hard upon his heels, to dim his fame. And so it is with verse. One Guido stands up as the other kneels. It doesn't mean that Guinizelli's worse. It only means that Cavalcanti's new, and takes the title, Glory of Our Tongue. And chances are the poet who will do the same to him's already born, and young, and strong, and fit to chase him from the nest, and once again sing what was never sung before, with turning head and puffed-up chest. The world's noise is the breath of a light breeze, which goes this way and that, and changes name only because it changes quarter. Please, convince me how you might have the more fame if you die old than if you died before you gave up talking baby talk. And when 1,000 years have passed, which is no more than one blink to the universe, what then? The slowest wheeling stars move 1 degree, from west to east in every 100 years, the merest moment of eternity, and fame we measure by our falling tears that flow for just a while and then run dry. Of him ahead of me who struggles on, all Tuscany resounded, and now try to hear a whisper of him. His fame's gone. Yes, even in Siena, where he reigned when Florence's high riders were destroyed, so full of pride they were. And it was drained, and now they're like cheap whores to avoid. Your fame, it is the color of the grass, which comes and goes, because what withers it is what induces its green tips to pass up through the earth. And I must admit, your speech makes my heart tremble, and abates my own swelled head. But who is he of whom you spoke just now? "One of the one-time greats, it's Provenzan Salvani," he said. Room has here been found for him, because he thought in his presumption to have in his hands all of Siena. So in pride he fought, and not against pride, until all those lands were his, and he has gone thus without rest since he met death. Such is the coin he pays in quittance, who back there would be the best. And I'm told the spirit that delays too long in life before repenting must remain outside that door, and not ascend thus far, unless good prayers are paid in trust, for long enough to match from end to end his lifetime. So how comes it he is here?
When he was in his prime, the answer came. He chose, and his own shame he did not fear, Siena's marketplace to be the frame in which he stood, a living portrait of humility, as ransom for a friend rotting in Charles's jail. This act of love was visible as suffering, to rend the heart. His every vein and sinew shook. I say no more, and know that what I say is dark, but soon your townsman, who once took your part, will send you on a lonely way. It was his self-abasement brought you through. The bitter begging bowl awaits you too.
Canto 12. I and that burdened soul, as far as my sweet teacher let me, side by side went on, as though we were yoked oxen, brought low by a load that curved us, all defenses gone. But then my guide said, Now you must leave these behind, and move, for here it would be well with sail and oar and all your faculties to drive your own boat. Quickly, truth to tell, I straightened up my body, though my mind stayed bowed and shrunken. Scared of come what might, I set out eagerly to stay behind my guide, both proving that our steps were light, and he, Turn down your eyes. It will be well for you to make your path a pleasure by seeing the flags you tread, the tales they tell. As pavement tombs to call up those who die, bear carved designs of what they were before, for which so often tears are shed by those who have the gift of pity as their store of memory is stirred, so there arose from this unyielding and yet living floor the same sense of fine craftsmanship, but all of more verisimilitude, the whole breadth of the roadway from the mountain wall out to the edge. More noble in his soul than any creature, there see Satan fall like lightning from the sky on the one side. Briareus, on the other, by the spear of heaven pierced, lay heavy, petrified, by chill death. And Apollo, he was here, with Mars and Pallas, and all of them still armed about their father Jupiter. They gazed on scattered giant limbs. Nimrod, alarmed at his own cleverness, as if amazed by his great babbling tower, stared at the charmed people of Shinar, likewise proud of it. Niobe, I saw you with crying eyes traced on the road, with company to fit your pride. Alas, too late to make you wise, those 14 helpless children slain. And you, King Saul, you lay there dead on your own sword in Gilboa, where never rain or dew would come again, abandoned by the Lord for pride. And sad Arachne, you there too. I saw you in the wrecked web of your thread, already half a spider, wretched, changed from challenging Minerva. Every shred was there, and your new long legs were arranged to show their bent joints high above your head. Next, Rehoboam, king of Israel, whose depiction here seemed not to threaten, since it fled by chariot as if to lose pursuers, but they weren't there. So that prince proved how his father Solomon was sage, by being foolish with his rates of tax, goading the usual rumble to a rage. And that hard pavement showed, as if in wax, how Alcmaeon once proved that sad pearl string was costly to his mother, how his sons fell on Sennacherib to kill that king in his own temple. And you'd swear blood runs just here, where Tomyris tells Cyrus, Now the blood you thirsted for is yours to drink. She's talking to his severed head. Somehow, above the vat, his eyes appear to blink. And there was Holofernes being slain,
and all his army of Assyrians fleeing in desperate rout across the plain, bereft of their proud leader and his plans. I heard the slaughter, saw the cries of pain, and Troy I saw in ashes. Ilion, pride brought your topless towers low, and vile you were before you caught fire and were gone, and these designs showed that in stunning style. What master of the brush or chisel could have traced the shapes, incised the outlines there, which even experts would have thought too good for words? It seemed as if the living breathed the air, and all the dead were dead. One who had seen these actual things could not have seen them more clearly than I who saw all that had been as I went stooping. More now than before, chest out, head high, and eyes front, sons of Eve, never look down to see your evil trail. More of the mountain than I could believe we had encircled. That the sun could sail so far, so fast, I'd likewise failed to guess, having been too absorbed, when he who gazed always ahead said, "Heads up! We have less time than you think for ambling round amazed. Here comes an angel, as the time of day is marked by the sixth handmaid of the car that hauls the sun. In flames she breaks away. Make sure your look and general bearing are reverent to meet the herald. Let him be pleased to direct us. Days like this can dawn just once." Used to his well-worn homily that I should not waste time, I was not torn as to his meaning. The fair creature stepped towards us. He was clad in white. His face trembled, a star at sunrise. His wings swept wide with his open arms. "This is the place," he said, "that has the steps. From here ascent is easy, yet few come to meet this call. You race of men, from birth you all were meant to fly. How is it you consent to fall back down again just for a little bit of breeze, a puff of glory?" Then he led the two of us to where the rock was split. He struck my forehead with his wings and said my journey would be safe, he'd vouch for it. As on the right hand, when you climb the hill to San Miniato, there are stairs to break that long, hard pathway, steep enough to kill. Stairs put there by a city that could make the right decisions, guard its measures, still keep records, so the bank that came down there, steep from the upper circle, could be climbed with ease. But still the hefty rock laid bare on each side pressed in close. And then there chimed, as we stepped in between, voices in tones so sweet, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." No mere words could match. But how these broken stones were different from the doors I'd come to know in hell. For here the entrance teemed with songs, and there with lamentations. Now as we mounted the sacred stairs, and here one longs for one plain phrase that fits, I seemed to be far lighter than I was before. "What weight," I asked my master, "has been shorn from me, that I so blithely go up through the gate, almost without an effort?" "When that mark of P repeated on your brow sixfold, which once was seven, has all grown less dark and disappeared, divine goodwill will hold your feet in such a mastery that they will find not only ease, but sheer delight in being urged on upward. Just the way those do when something unknown to their sight is on their head, but they can guess by signs from others that it's there. And with one hand they search for it and find it on those lines. With my right hand spread fingertips I scanned, and did indeed find just six times. The trace of that rune the keyholder with his brand had touched there to my brow, that tender place. My leader watched me with a smiling face." Canto 13. Now we were on the top step of the stair. A cutback in the mountain greeted us a second time. There was a terrace there, ringing the hill with lesser radius, and thus a sharper curve. No shade, all bare, no carving. Just the blank road and the bank, the livid stone. "If we should wait to ask," the poet said, "our choice may, to be frank, be left too long. And so he made his task to stare into the sun, and of his right side make a pivot and bring round his left. "You that I trust on this new road, sweet light," he said, "to show us through the warp and weft of this place we need guidance in, you give warmth to the world to match the light you cast. Unless grace argues otherwise, we live according to your beams from first to last." Already there, we'd gone what we would call a mile here, made quick by our eager will, when we heard spirits flying that were all voices. Unseen they flew to us, to fill the air around us with their biddings to love's table. And the first voice that flew past shouted, "They have no wine!" And as it flew beyond us cried the same thing, and at last was almost out of earshot when the next went by us crying, "I'm Orestes!" Nor did that one stay. "Father," I said, perplexed, "what are these voices?" But there was one more. It said, "Love those from whom you've suffered wrong." My guide, "The sin of envy meets its scourge in this round, and of that scourge every thong flaying that disposition must emerge from love. And thus the curb that speaks against the sin must sing the virtue. You will hear that sound, if I judge right, when we've commenced our entry to the Pass of Parton. Near us now, if you look straight ahead, you'll see people before us spaced along the cliff." With wider eyes I looked in front of me, and there sat shades in cloaks that looked as if they shared the color of the stone. And when we went a little further, I heard cries of "Mary, pray for us," of "Michael," then of "Peter," and "All Saints." Still my mind tries in vain to think of just one man alive on earth today, so hard he'd not have been transfixed by pity. Nor did I arrive so near them that their movement could be seen without the eyes that saw them being wrung by great grief. A coarse haircloth seemed to wrap their figures, and one from the other hung on proffered shoulders, side by side, no gap, all propped up by the bank. Just so the blind and destitute turn up to beg at church, as if they sought indulgence, and you find them leaning on each other, and you search your pockets, moved to pity, not just by their words, but by their looks, which plead no less. And as the blind take from the sun on high, small profit, so the light brings no largesse to these shades in this place I speak of here. All had their eyelids stitched with iron wire, like untamed falcons, and it did appear to me that my effrontery was dire. Seeing these others while I was unseen, I turned to my wise comfort. Well he knew what my embarrassed silence had to mean, and said, "Speak to the point, but speak up, do." As we walked on the terrace past the scene, Virgil was with me at the edge where one might fall, for that side had no parapet. And on my other side I saw tears run, bathing the cheeks of those shades I see yet. Devout shades. But their eyes were ghastly seams remorse from envy, forced their weeping through. To them I said, "The one aim of your dreams, to see the light on high, will come to you, you may be sure, and grace will then soon clear the scum your conscience builds, so that the flow of memory may run without a smear. In view of that, pray tell me if you know, and if you do, I'll hold the kindness dear, if anyone Italian is among your number, if I'm told it may be well for him." And then I heard someone give tongue. "Brother, there is a truth you need to tell. All here are of one city. If there were any that lived in Italy, then say they lived as pilgrims." This polite demur came from, I thought, a little up the way, so that I raised my voice. Among the press I saw a shade marked by expectancy, and if you wonder how I came to guess, it raised its chin the way the blind do. "Be frank with me, spirit," I said. "You that bow to mount up high, if it was you I heard just then, your name and city, tell me now." "Siena," she replied, And, in a word, I cleanse myself here of my life of sin like all the others, weeping to him that he give himself to us. Wisdom was in my name, but not in me. My name fell flat, Sapia, for I rejoiced in others' hurt far more than at my own good luck, and lest you think that I deceive you, I assert the truth, that when the ark had passed the crest of my years, I was mad already. My townsmen were in Valdesta, but the foe joined battle with them. And that day on high the thing was willed that I had prayed for. So my nephew and his gibbeline pigsty of suckers up were hounded down the track of bitter flight, and as I watched the chase, gladness beyond bounds seized me. I threw back my head and aimed at heaven my bold face, crying to God, I fear you now no more. Just like the blackbird, when the sun returned, near death I sought God's peace, and I'd be sore pressed for a lessening, or so I've heard it said, of all my debts by penitence, had Peter the comb-seller, holy man and hermit, not wrapped me in his immense mantle of charity. Yes, he began to put my name in his petitions. Mine! But who are you, that as he goes inquires about us, and I think I can divine speaks with the breath, whose eyes are free of wires? I too, I said, will lose my eyesight here, but only for a little. My own sins in envious looks were small. A greater fear suspends my soul until it slowly spins. I mean the grief below, brought on by pride. That load is with me as this climb begins. And she, you're here with us. Who was the guide that brought you up, if you think to retrace your steps? And I, he that is with me, who does not speak. And I live. Now by the grace to which you've been elected, spirit, you have not yet asked, as others in your place have done, if yonder I can speak and move on your behalf. Ah, she replied, so strange is this to hear, that it's enough to prove God loves you. Somehow then you might arrange to help me with your prayers. You, I implore, by what you crave most, if you ever tread the soil of Tuscany, that you restore my name among my kin. You'll find them spread among that vain race who wait for their dream in Talamone. Yes, our own seaport one day, but now a long and fevered scheme for losing money, of the self-same sort as our eternal quest to find the stream that flows beneath our land. Siena, sail on wings of fantasy. How can you fail?
Canto 14.
Who's this that makes the circuit of our hill before death comes to him to grant his flight, who shuts his eyes and opens them at will? I don't know, though I do know to this height he doesn't come alone. But you ask first, since you are nearest. Make your greeting kind, that he may speak.
In that way they rehearsed. Two spirits propped together of a mind to talk with us.
Embodied soul, one said, who heads for heaven, tap your sympathy. Tell us your name and provenance. We're led to marvel not just at the novelty of your arrival here, but at the grace you're given.
Aye.
Through central Tuscany a stream winds, whose beginnings we can trace to Falterona, for 100 miles and more, and on its banks this shape was born. My name? A man must make a name who styles himself by name, and blowing my own horn would make no sense as yet. And then the shade who'd spoken first said,
If I have the wit to catch your meaning, by those words you made allusion to the Arno.
Think of it, the other chipped in. Why did he conceal the river's name? Such secrecies are fit for those to whom a horror is too real.
The shade who'd been addressed said,
I don't know. But it is fitting such a valley's name should perish, since for all its rancid flow, from far up in those mountains with the fame of having given birth to a large part, even of Sicily, a source that teems with many waters,
with a racing start of far more than its share of brooks and streams, from that source all the way downhill to where it gives back to the sea all that the sky draws from it, so that rivers may be there. For all the way that river meets the eye, virtue is held an enemy by all, a snake to flee from. This could be because of mischief in the ground, or you might call that gift a custom, passed on without pause through generations, so that those who dwell in that sad valley are now debased in nature. It might seem that they are well by Circe's pigs, pastured on their own waste. At first, through Casentino, among hogs, who filthily eat acorns and prefer that diet to man's food, through ponds and bogs it makes its feeble way, and then the spur of land that bends it brings it to the dogs that snarl out of Arezzo more than they have any right to for their actual power. From there, in scorn, it turns its snout away and goes on falling, swelling by the hour. The more it does, the more does the accursed and ill-starred ditch find dogs transmogrified to wolves at Florence, which should be the worst. But there is more, because from either side hemmed in, it falls through gorges down to meet the Pisan foxes, lithe and full of guile. They know no trap their cunning can't defeat. Nor will I, even for a little while, stop talking just because this mortal hears. He ought to bear in mind that what I say I am inspired to lay forth for your ears by truth, and I see there will come a day when your grandson, who hunts the wolves and sends them frantic in their fear, will sell their meat still living, and for many their life ends in slaughter like old cattle. It's complete. A double robbery. They lose their lives, and he his honor. From the wretched wood he comes forth bloody, having cut with knives the trees that will not once more come to good inside 100 years. As when bad news, no matter where it comes from, pales the face of him who hears, I saw the other lose composure as these words sank into place. The speech of one, the other's look, made me eager to know their names. And so with much entreaty I put questions, whereat he who spoke to me before said, "You, by such demands, would have me do for you what you do not for me. But seeing that God wills his grace to shine through you, this I will do without a grudge. A servant who fulfills your wish. Know, then, I am the Ghibelline Guido del Duca." So did envy flame in my blood that no sooner had I seen a happy man, but color overcame my features. I was livid. Here I reap the straw I sowed. Ah, humans, why this urge to set your hearts on what no one can keep except alone, so you can never merge in partnership? But my companion here is Rinier, great Guelph, pride of the stem of Calboli, for none since has come near inheriting his worth. But all of them, not just his line alone, all have been shorn in the Romagna, of their virtues, real or just for show, possessed or merely worn, for in that land the ground by now, you feel, is so full of envenomed shoots, the plough would never get them out. But Lizio, the good and courteous, where is he now? Pier Traversaro, and the kind Guido da Prata, and so many others— how is it that they are gone? The Romagnoles have turned to bastards. Tuscan, don't be stunned that I should weep for all those noble souls, the ladies and the knights, the endless fund of stories about deeds and sports to which love moved us and good manners. And now think how hearts are grown malicious and are rich in nothing but the depths to which they sink. Ah, Bertinoro, my sweet nest, where I spent years of safety high above lush fields, how is it you don't will yourself to die when all your finest families and their shields are fled from the corruption? Better far, Bagnacavallo, where they breed no more. Both Cogno and Castrocaro are worse off because the count's spawn as before. Again, so many others. But enough. Tuscan, go on your way. For now my choice is not to talk, but weep, so much the stuff of our discussion wrings my heart.
His voice fell silent. Since we knew they heard us leave, that they were mute made us more confident our way was right and it would not deceive. And then again, as on alone we went, another voice, as if a lightning bolt should cleave the air, flew into us and said, the words of Cain acknowledging his fault, "Whoever finds me slays me," and it fled as thunder at the sudden cloudburst dies. And when our ears had just a moment's rest, another roared as if to split the skies, like one more thunderclap that closely pressed upon the first. "I am Aglaurus, turned to stone because my sister had the love of Mercury. I envied and I earned a place here." On our way to high above, I took a step aside, instead of straight ahead, so as to have my guide's support. The air by now was in a quiet state, all round, and he, that stretch, one would have thought, was hard enough to hold a man in bounds. But not you. No, you took the bait. The hook of your old enemy, his sights and sounds, got into you. He reads you like a book. And then no curb applies or prize appeals. The heavens call you, whirl about you, show their endless beauty. You and the mind reels at all the petty stuff you crave to know. See only the sad business of the earth. He smites you. He who knows what that is worth.
Canto 15. Evening in Italy, and here midnight. The same amounts the sun that always plays between its tropics like a child, gains height from dawn to the third hour, was in the day's last quarter, left to run down where you are. And here the beams struck us full in the face. For we had gone around the hill so far, we headed straight into the west. The place and time weighed down my brow more than before, by far the splendor of it. But the cause being unknown, I was left dazed, and wore my hand above my eyebrows without pause, to temper the excess of light with shade. As from the water on the mirror rise all rays at the same angle that is made when they go down, and so come to our eyes with undeflected force and do not fade, as science and experiment have proved, just so it seemed to me that I was hit by such a light that my poor eyesight moved away at high speed. Tell me, what is it that I can't shield my eyes from, gentle guide, and seems to come near?
Do not be amazed, he said, if heaven's household glorified still dazzles you and leaves you walking dazed. This is a messenger who has been sent to call you to the clime, and very soon the sight of these will hold no element of hardship, but indeed will be a boon. Delight as great as you are fit to feel.
The blessed angel, when we reached him, said with glad voice, "Enter here." This soft appeal was further eased when we began to tread a stairway less steep than the others. We were soon through, and were mounting when we heard, "The merciful are blessed." The melody was sung behind us, and then word for word, "Rejoice, for you have won." My guide and I ascended by ourselves, and as we walked, I thought to profit from his words. So why did that one from Romagna, when he talked of owners, partners, and what each can buy, think I would understand? And he... He knows the cost of his worst fault, and so it's not a wonder he reproaches it, to close the gap between himself and what he got from envy, great regret. And as for you, it is because your wishes are still set on having more by sharing less, that through your heart the sin of envy even yet can blow its bellows and you sigh. But should the love of higher things bend up your need away from one man's sense of what is good, that fear would leave your breast. For it is greed, and there on high, the more who love the phrase, "It's ours," more than "It's mine,"
the more of worth each one possesses, and the more the blaze of charity in that court. I, then, dearth of knowledge deepens. If I'd held my peace before, I would have less perplexity. How can it be that each one may increase his share the more there are to be given the share? And he, let wonder cease. Because your mind still set on earthly things, you gather shadows from the light. Above, the good is endless, beyond words. It wings with all speed in the same way towards love, as sunbeams do to something bright. It gives itself the more of love it finds. As charity extends, the more it lives, and all the souls in love up there it binds together with more love. Love propagates, returning from a mirror. If my speech leaves you still hungry, then a feast awaits. You will see Beatrice, and how she, from each and every craving that you have, will make you free. Seek only to expunge the 5 wounds you have left, though doing that will take a painful healing. Grit your teeth and strive. 2 gone, and 5 to go. And when I was about to say, "All right, bring on the day," I saw we'd reached the right road, and because my eye was keen, not 1 word could I say. Visions of ecstasy held me enthralled, a populated temple. At the door, a woman, sweet-faced like a mother, called, "My son, how can you do this to us? For your father and I seek you and are sad." She said that, then she vanished. There came next a further woman. On her cheek she had the running waters of somebody vexed with rancor at another. Fighting mad, she said, "If you are lord of Athens, whose name brought the gods to battle, and from which all knowledge shines, then vengeance you should use on those bold arms that fancied themselves rich and well enough born to reach out and hold our daughter. Pisistratus, justice calls!" Her lord, it seemed to me, without being cold, was gentle, gracious, tranquil. "If it falls to us to choose, what shall we do to one that seeks our harm? If we should so condemn someone who loves us, come, can this be done?" But I saw others, and the case with them was otherwise. In wrath they slew a youth with stones, and they were shouting, "Kill, kill, kill!" And down he sank to earth, because in truth, already death weighed down on him, but still his eyes were gates to heaven, even in his agony, bidding the Lord bestow a pardon on his killers in their sin. And by his look you knew it would be so, for it unlocked compassion. When my soul, from just itself, came back to what was real outside of it, existence as a whole, I saw that these dreams had been sent to deal with things in my mind. And my guide, aware that I was fighting my way free from sleep, said, "What's wrong? Have you come back? Are you there? For half a league or more I watched you keep upright with difficulty, your eyes veiled, your feet adrift, as if fatigue or wine or both befuddled you." And thus assailed, I said, "Kind father, such fault was not mine. Listen, and I will tell you why I failed to keep my feet. I saw something. But what?" And he, "Had you 100 marks upon your forehead, still your faintest thoughts would not be hidden from me. What you saw, now gone, was shown to you so you would not neglect from lethargy, to open up your heart before those peaceful waters that collect first in the fountain where they have their start and then pour forth eternally. Nor did I ask what ailed you, as one asks who sees, unseeing, someone lifeless, lying rid of all signs, but I asked it to appease my urge to give your feet force in their bid to climb. So must the slow be spurred. They waste their waking hour when it comes back." We went on through the evening, and the way we faced ahead, our concentrated gaze we sent against the bright late rays, when plume by plume black smoke approached. And I mean black as night. No getting out of it. There wasn't room. And soon it took us from our whole eyesight, and all our pure air, so we might as well, even up here, have been back there in hell.
Canto 16. Neither in hell's gloom, nor in cloudy night bereft of stars and planets, had I yet known in my life a veil that blocked my sight so thick, of stuff so harsh, as that one set to my eyes by the smoke that wrapped us there, choking my eyelids shut. Therefore my wise and faithful escort moved in close, and where his shoulder was I felt, and in the guise of someone blind who stays behind his guide to skirt what knocked against might hurt or kill. So I edged through the foul and bitter tide. He kept on saying, I can hear it still, don't get cut off from me. On every side were voices, and they seemed to pray for peace and mercy to God's Lamb that took away our sins. And always those hymns, without cease, had the same words beginning, Agnus Dei. And just one measure their accord complete. I asked, are all these spirits that I hear? And he, they are. The prayers that they repeat mean that they strive to bring the moment near when they will lay the knot of anger loose. Who are you that come here to cleave our smoke and speak as if you tell time by the use of words that were once Roman? One voice spoke. My master, answer, and make sure you ask, is this the way up? And I, you that make the cleansing of yourself your present task, so you may shine in fairness when you take the road back to the one that made you, you will hear a marvel if you stay near me. I will, as far as I'm permitted to, he said. And if the smoke won't let us see, hearing will keep us joined. And then I said, wrapped in the flesh that death undoes, I find my way up, and I came here through the dread reaches of hell, and since God has a mind to take me into grace, and I am led alive, like no one else after St. Paul, to see his court, don't hide from me, but tell me who you were, and if this entrance hall to the next stage is on this road. Then well may your words be our escort. I knew all the world, he said. I, Marco, Lombard I. Lover of qualities for which they now can't bend the bow to let the arrow fly, let alone hit them. Straight ahead is how you go. I pray that when you reach the sky, you'll pray for me. And I to him, I pledge my faith to you to do what you now seek, but still a doubt within keeps me on edge to breaking point. What I have heard you speak doubles the doubt I brought here from Guido, and so confirms the world must be indeed barren of virtue, as you have let me know. With evil decked, and evil in the seed. But now I pray you say why this is so. Tell me the cause, that I may tell the world. Some say the fault is in our stars, and some it's in ourselves. And here a sigh unfurled, saying, alas, for grief. Brother, you come indeed from the blind realm, for you that live refer all causes to the sky alone, as if it only had the power to give movement to things. Were it to wholly own that property, however, all free will would leave you, and there'd be no justice in joy for good deeds or grief for doing ill. The star field helps your impulses begin. I don't say all of them, but if I did, on good and bad and on free choice it shines. Choice which, if it survives that first armed bid to shape it, will be raised on the right lines and conquer all. It's to a greater force and better nature you, since freedom's yours, are subject. Therein lies the one true source of your mind, which the mere stars lack the laws to rule. Thus, if the present world should veer, the cause is in you, and it must be sought in you. To prove this to you, I am here, your faithful scout.
just like a child in sport. With tears and smiles, our little simple soul emerges from his hand. He looks at it with fondness, though as yet it lacks the whole of knowledge, and so far is scarcely fit to be considered as itself. It moves because its maker moves it. When it turns to what attracts it, and at first it proves each trifling good by taste, and what it learns, being beguiled, is to run after more, if guide and curb don't turn its love aside. For law to be a break on this, therefore, there was a need, a law to override the impulse of delight. Need for a king, fit to make out the tower's tip at least of the true city. Law. Well, there's a thing. The law exists, but by default has ceased to be enforced. No emperor, and the pope knows the law's letter but ignores its heart. Our shepherd, going on before, can cope with worldly things, but the unearthly part escapes him. He has half the pastoral scope. He chews the cud, but has not the split hoof, and therefore is unclean. We may not eat. Just watch the people, if you want the proof. They see him snatching at the easy meat they too are greedy for, and do the same, asking no more. Thus you can see it plain. Ill guidance is the cause of the ill fame the world has earned, this wicked world of pain. Bad leadership, not nature gone to rot in you. For Rome, which made the just world, could boast two bright suns once, as it now cannot. Each clarified one path, not bad and good, but world and God. And now, what have we got? One quells the other. Sword and shepherd's crook are joined, and all for ill, since, joined, the one has no fear of the other. Take a look. If you should doubt this tale of mischief done by false ambition at an ear of corn, for plant is known by seed. There on the land, between the Adige and Po, were born, and grew for generations a great band of all the brave and courteous, and then the Emperor Frederick met his nemesis, the papacy. And now only those men can cross it safely who would rather miss, for shame, all converse with the virtuous, or even a mere meeting. Growing old, down there are three men we might well discuss, as paragons the ancient times may hold, up to the new as figures of reproof. Curado and Gerardo were dead straight, and Guido da Castel was not aloof from all the horsemen who passed by his gate, such that the French would call him, in their style, the guileless Lombard. So we may deduce the Church of Rome, divided all this while into two powers, falls without excuse into the mire, itself and its great task both utterly befouled. "You put the case with skill, my Marco," said I. "I need ask no more why Levi's sons and all that race who served the tabernacle were debarred from worldly goods. But tell me who he is, Gerardo, who yet breathes to give a hard lesson in virtue from an age once his to this age of barbarity in which we now must live." He said, "Either your speech deceives me, or it tests me. Phrase and pitch are Tuscan. Yet somehow I have to teach you everything about Gerardo. Him I know by no last name, because it's been dragged in the dirt, its luster dusted dim, by his loose daughter Gaia. This I've seen, a true sign of today. Now may the Lord be with you, for no further can I walk with you. There is a risk I can't afford, much as I have enjoyed our little talk. You see there, where the smoke is turning white, it will turn brighter yet, and you will see an angel, for he is that source of light. But I must leave you before he sees me." He turned back, cutting short our colloquy. Canto 17. Remember, reader, if you've ever been caught in the mountain mist, so nothing could, except as moles see through the skin, be seen, how when the day showed signs of coming good, the dense white vapors started to unclasp, and through them the sun's feeble disk appeared. Remember that, and your mind soon may grasp how I, at first, and as its setting neared, now saw the sun again. And so I came, my step matched to my guide's in that pale glow, forth from the fog to see the beams whose flame was close to dying on the beach below. Imagination! With your power to steal our thoughts at times away from actual things, so that although a thousand trumpets peal around us, still we pay no heed, who stings you into life when our dulled senses feel nothing to offer you. The light that moves your workings takes its form in heaven, by itself, or by God's will, which, if that proves to be the Maker, sends it down the sky to you. A Philomela's sister, when pursued for her foul deed she changed her shape into a nightingale, the imprint then entered my thoughts. My mind tried to escape. Ah, Procne! How your crime dismayed all men! Into itself, so nothing from outside could be received. But then came raining down, through my high fantasy, the crucified figure of Haman, scornful his fierce frown, dying in anger, and around him were Ahasuerus in his greatness, and Esther his queen. It was because of her that Haman's plot against Jews in that land was foiled. And there her cousin Mordecai, of such integrity in word and deed. And as the image on my inner eye paled by itself, a bubble in sore need of the water that it formed in, there arose the vision of a girl in bitter tears. And she said, "Queen, how was it that you chose from anger to cut short your natural years? You died for me, for your Lavinia, to keep me. But you should have loved me less, and now I am the one who mourns for far more than the ruin of my Turnus. Yes, the wreck I weep for endlessly is yours." As sudden new light causes sleep to break, which being broken fitfully restores itself before it fades and we're awake, so my imagination fell away. As soon as a bright light shone in my face, brighter by far than in our usual day, I turned to get my bearings in this place, when through the dazzle I heard some voice say, "Here is the place to climb." So I was drawn away from all thoughts else, and my desire to see that speaker had so white a dawn, it needs no rest, for it will never tire until we meet at last. But as the sun weighs down our vision with excess of fire and veils its outline with its power to stun, just so my power at this point came up short. "A spirit hidden in its sacred light," my leader said, as if spurred by my thought, "is guiding us unsought from height to height, as we ourselves might give ourselves support, no questions asked. For he who waits to ask is of a mind to face refusal. Now, let's time our steps in answer to the task of going where he points, and so somehow ascend before it darkens. After that, we can't go on until the sky turns fair." Into the stairway which we now were at, we turned our steps together, and right there, on the first step, I thought I felt a wing beside me fan my face, and clearly heard, "Beati Pacifici." The key thing it said next I remember word for word. "They have no sin of anger." Lingering, the last light rays were shining far aloft, so high up on the hill that the sky's sides were spattered with the points still sparse and soft of the first stars. "Night comes while day abides." "My strength," I said within myself, "why do you drain away?" For in my legs I felt the force suspended. Here the stairs came to their end, and I could sense my impulse melt like a ship approaching shore, as in the new circle I listened for a while to see if anything was happening, then said, "Kind father, what offense is it, tell me, that is purged here?" "Our feet may have been led to stillness, but let not your speech be still." And he, "The love of good is here restored, that fell short of its duty. With a will the oar is plied anew that had grown bored and trifled with the water. To fulfill your hope more quickly of an easy mind, turn it to me, and you will benefit from this delay. My son, as you will find deep in your knowledge and informing it, neither creator, no, nor any kind of creature was there ever without love, if of the mind or natural. It may not the natural heir, and ranks above the other in that aspect. Minds have got two ways to err in love. The wrong object, or else the vigor with which love's pursued. There might be excess, there might be defect. Directed at the primal good, imbued with no more than a rational respect toward the second thing, the world, it won't cause sinful pleasure. But when evil turns its head, or when its inner counsels don't govern the rate at which its longing burns for serving its own good, perhaps too much, perhaps too little, then the creature spurns its own creator, and the two lose touch except as adversaries. From that fact, you'll understand that love must be the source in you of every virtue and vile act deserving punishment. Since love, of course, can never turn against the one who feels the love, but has his welfare most at heart. All beings are protected by strong seals against self-loathing. No one is apart from the first one, none self-sustaining. No creature can be cut off by hating him. Only a neighbor's evil is loved so. And this love, in your human life and limb, the common clay in which you come and go, springs up in three ways. There is he that hopes to rise beside his neighbor's sharp descent, and looks with favor when the downward slopes demote another's greatness, as was meant to be, he thinks. And he thinks that from pride. There's he that fears his power might be lost, and all his honor and high state denied, because another has them at his cost, or so he feels, although they rank the same. Sorely aggrieved, he longs to see reverse the other's rise to equal power and fame, and it's by envy that he has been cursed. The third man feels disgraced by some insult, and hungers for revenge, and plots and plans, and makes another's harm into a cult which hangs around the house like pots and pans, and this is anger. These are the three kinds of love gone wrong they weep for back in those three circles you've just come through. In their minds, they had the vice, and they do not suppose to be excused, although the sin remained just a propensity, mere sinfulness. But now there is still more to be explained. Those who pursue the good, but strive with less than their full measure to attain it. All, although confused, find good to apprehend in which the